is hard. But we want to be real clear on why the way of the cross is hard. It's not because it's hard to be good. Some people think it's hard because, oh, well, you gotta be good. You gotta be a good person. You gotta try to be good. And the cross requires us to be good. And that's not it. That's been the position of Christianity sometimes, but that's not the case. Sorry. If you turn in your Bibles to Luke 11, and we're going to hear Jesus talk a little further about this. It goes well with what Max shared earlier, and he shared from Matthew, about the division that the cross brings. And we're going to cover quite a bit of ground in a very short amount of time. In Luke 11, starting in verse 37 and going through verse 44, a conflict arises because Jesus gets invited over to someone's house for dinner, probably a Pharisee of some kind. And he doesn't, before they sit down to eat, he doesn't go through the ritual hand washing. It wasn't that he didn't go to the bathroom and wash his hands, but there was a cleansing ritual that he forewent. He didn't go through the ceremonial rule of hand washing, and he got in trouble for it because that's not how you're supposed to be. You're breaking the rules. You're not doing what you should do. And Jesus takes the opportunity to attack this idea of merely external righteousness. In verse 39, he says, "Listen, you Pharisees, clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but inside of you, you are full of robbery and wickedness." He says, you're like a cup. And I've back when I was single especially, I had some cups that, you know, there was some time between washings. And sometimes I had biology experiments going on in those cups. Now, the outside of the cups weren't bad. They weren't dirty. But inside, I had, you know, bacteria growing. And that's what he says here. He says, you guys are like that. He says, you're really good on the outside. You're nice and clean and polished, but inside, you're in trouble. You don't look good. You are dirty. And he attacks this outward righteousness. He says it again in 42. "Woe to you, Pharisees! You pay tithe of mint and rue and every kind of garden herb, yet disregard justice and the love of God, but these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others." In other words, it's not bad that the outside of the cup is clean. He says, but you're not taking care of the important things. Then he also goes over the legalism that it's at work here. In verse 46, he says, "Woe to you lawyers as well, for you weigh men down with burdens hard to bear, while you yourselves will not even touch the burdens with one of your fingers." In other words, as we say today, you won't lift a finger to help. So you're busy having all these rules as a lawyer, all these tough things that makes it so hard for people to do, but you don't do them. Verse 52, "Woe to you lawyers, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter in yourselves, and those who were entering in, you hindered." Those who were entering in, you hindered. He says, you guys are not helping people know God. You're busy helping people know the rule book. And those who are trying to know God, you're getting in their way. You're actually making it harder for people to know God. You're making it harder for people to come to Jesus, come to the Messiah. Because you're making it about rule following, not a repentant heart receiving grace. Judging, not gracing. If I can turn it into a verb, judging, not gracing. Verse 54, they love this condemnation so much that it says, plotting against him, they were very hostile in verse 53, and they questioned him closely on many subjects, plotting against him to catch him in something he might say. And some of us can relate to that of, boy, you better not say the wrong thing because, bang, they'll get you. And that's what they were with Jesus. As a result, he says, man, you're too focused on the outward, not focused on the inward. And so what do? They focused even harder on getting everything exactly right. They're just looking for something to get Jesus with. So Jesus answers that in chapter 12, and he says in verse 2 and 3, first he says, listen, everything's going to be revealed. Nothing is hidden that will not be brought out. He's talking about, again, what's inside that cup. Eventually all this is going to be revealed, and you're going to find out who's really real. And then in 4 through 12, he makes a statement to his followers. He says, my friends, don't be afraid. of those who would kill the body. And after that, there's no more they can do to you. And he goes on, and some of us are familiar with the passage. He says, you know, hey, even the sparrows are valuable, that five sparrows are sold for 1 cent, but I don't miss one of them. Not one of them dies without me being aware of it, and you're more valuable than sparrows. He says, so don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. If you confess me, don't be afraid. I won't forget you. And he talks about that all the way through down through 12. He says, and when they drag you into court, when they drag you into synagogues and they accuse you, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of what you're going to say. Don't be afraid of how you're going to answer. I'm with you. You'll be okay. He says, in fact, the only thing that you should be afraid of is in verse 5, fear the one who after he is killed has authority to cast into hell. I tell you, fear him. Which is, of course, referring to God. He says, don't be afraid of these guys. Fear God. He doesn't mean fear as in terror, but he means to have the respect for God. God is the one that we have to deal with, not people. Then in verses 13 through 34, he brings up the next thing. He talks about greed and earthly treasure. The first person, somebody came to him and says, hey, my brother's not sharing enough of the inheritance with me. Jesus said, hey, I'm not here to worry about that. And then he says in 15, be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does life consist of his possessions. And then he tells another parable about a guy who had a lot of great stuff but died. And so he talks about greed and earthly treasure, not being focused on that. And then in verses 35 through 48, he says, listen, I'm coming back. Get ready. Verse 36, be like men who are waiting for their master when he returns from the wedding feast. So when he returns, they may immediately open the door to him when he comes and knocks. He says, be ready, I'm coming back, and you're not going to know when. Verse 40, you too be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect. He's coming back like a thief, he says, and he's going to disrupt everything. So how are you living? And this goes with, the reason we're covering all this is because it goes with how we started with the hand washing, because it all fits together. It's all part of his teaching. Because, see, the Pharisees, they followed rules and held their spiritual blessings as riches. They held their spiritual blessing as riches. I mean, after all, think about what the Pharisees had in the community of the Jews. They had power. They had the most perfection. They were the best. They followed the rules. They knew them the most. They had the most position. In fact, they had everyone afraid of them because they were in positions of authority. They had a lot of possession. They had, their possession was their worldly righteousness. They were good. But really all they had was a righteous version of the world system. And that they were very proud of who they were and what they had, and they had a position of authority, and they were holding on to that. And Jesus has just said, listen, that's why your cup is dirty. And then he goes through and he says, listen, don't hold on to your riches. Don't be afraid of opposition. Don't be afraid of living for Christ. Don't be afraid for giving up for God. I'm coming back. Jesus disrupts all that. But think about how Jesus disrupted all that. Jesus had, if the Pharisees were good, Jesus was better because he was perfect. If the Pharisees had an important position, Jesus had the biggest position, God. If the Pharisees had a lot of possession, Jesus possesses everything. And what does he do with this awesome position, with this awesome authority, with this all this, the cattle on a thousand hills? What does he do here? He gives it up. He empties himself. It says elsewhere that although he existed as God, he did not consider that something to grasp, but emptied himself. He gave it all up. And these guys won't give up anything. They're busy protecting themselves. And he's surrendering it. And that's what he's teaching on all the way through here, saying, don't worry. And that brings us to 49, our key verse. I have come to cast fire upon the earth. And it goes directly with what Max shared earlier. He said, I didn't come to bring peace, I brought a sword. Here he said, he describes it as fire. I have come to cast fire on the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. But I have a baptism to undergo, and how distressed I am until it is accomplished. The cross is before him. Do you suppose that I came to grant peace on earth? I tell you no, but rather division. From now on, five members in one household will be divided. Three against two, two against three. They will be divided. Father against son, son against father, mother against daughter, daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. And he was also saying to the multitudes, we'll get to that in a second. He says, I bring division because to embrace Christ is to embrace a division, the cut of the cross. Because to embrace Christ and his cross will cut you off from things, from people, from the comfortable life and a nice view of yourself, a comfortable view of yourself. Because you can't sit there and be self-important at the cross. Because not even Jesus, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the God of creation, not even Jesus came to the cross and was self-important. And so we cannot come to the cross and hold on to who we are and how good we are and how important we are and how much we know. The cross will cut you off from things like that. And as Max shared, it'll cut you off from people because there are people who want no part of that. It'll cut you off from the comfortable life. It doesn't mean that God takes everything because he oftentimes will give you earthly blessings. He has blessed us here very much. But those blessings are not ours to hold. And we can't hold them in security. Our security is in Christ. People will judge you. People will condemn you. People will think you're foolish, that you're stupid. That's what happens when you come to the cross. And the interesting thing, and we sometimes miss this, because many of us can find examples where the world, as in the unbelievers, the pagan, those that want to indulge, will think that the cross is stupid, will think that the giving up yourself is stupid, will think that not making it about you is dumb and not defending your rights is stupid. But notice that it's not just them, because that's not who Jesus was struggling with. Religious people will be included. If you are not focused on following the rules. There are churches, for instance, there are churches where children are not welcomed because the rules say you got to be quiet. Now, if you've, yeah, I paid them. But there are churches where, and I've talked to people who come here and they can't get over it. Because they come here with their kids and they said, I've never been comfortable before in church because my kids sometimes make noise. And I'm like, yeah, mine too. But that's against the rules because church, children should be seen and not heard. And you sit there and you be quiet because that's a rule. Now, I haven't found that in Scripture. Where, and God said, during the Sunday morning service, thou shalt not allow the children to make noise. Right. Linda commented that we can't even keep the adults quiet. By proving her point. But that's the rules. And there are times when we have done that religiously. And there are churches now that won't have anything to do with me. Because I don't always follow the rules. I'm not wearing a tie tonight. I'm sorry. See, there's one right there. You can come Sunday and see what happens there. We'll see how that goes. So even there's going to be a division at times from those who want to focus on righteous outward righteousness, who want to focus on rule following, who want to focus on the outside of the cup rather than the inside of the cup. Now, again, we're not saying that, boy, it's just fun to go out and break the rules, but except oftentimes these rules are not God's standards. They're man's religious rules. And that was the problem with the Pharisees. And we need to not be afraid. Verses 54 through 56, he's not done talking about this. Because all this goes together. That's why it's a lot we're covering tonight, but it's all one thing. And he was also saying to the multitudes, when you see a cloud rising in the west, immediately you say a shower is coming. And that's how it turns out. And when you see a south wind blowing, you say it will be a hot day. And it turns out that way, because to the west was the Mediterranean Sea. So when the wind came off the west, they got rain. To the south was the desert. So the wind comes off the desert, it's going to be a hot day. You hypocrites! You know how to analyze the appearance of the earth and the sky, but why do you not analyze the present time? He says, since you know how to predict the weather, why can't you understand where we're at? What were we at? He was at a time where the Messiah was there to grant peace, to grant salvation. The end is coming. And we need to recognize that. We have a problem. We don't even like to recognize our own end. You know? We don't even like to recognize that we have an end. I'm becoming more and more aware of it because every time, once a year, people want to hold a party and celebrate. Wow, you're not getting older. You're just getting closer to death. Thank you. Like, boy, Good Friday service, always so uplifting. But we don't like to admit that. That's uncomfortable. And yet that was his point. He says, you got to be ready. I'm coming when you don't expect. We're going to face him at a time we don't expect. He says, now you can predict the weather. Why don't you notice that? Why don't you notice the times that you live in and be ready? And then he makes one last statement. He says, why do you not even of your own initiative judge what is right? Guys, get your act together is what he's telling him. And then he makes a comment that throws some people off, especially because sometimes they consider it out of the context. For while you are going with your opponent to appear before the magistrate, on your way there, make an effort to settle with him in order that he may not drag you before the judge. And the judge turn you over to the constable, and the constable throw you into prison. I say to you, you shall not get out of there until you have paid the very last cent. And some people said, well, this is where Jesus is talking about how if you have an enemy, you've got to go try to work with him, which would be a weird non sequitur from everything else he's just said. But he's talking about the time, and he's already said back before when he said, don't be afraid except for the one who can destroy your soul in hell. That's what he's talking about. He says, listen, pay attention to the times. If someone has something against you, and you're going to go and face judgment, deal with it before you have to face judgment. Make peace with him before you have to make judgment. Who is he talking about? Him. He's already said, I have come to bring division. I have come to deal with these things. Make peace with God before you get there. Because so often we don't make peace with God before we get there. What is the cut of the cross? It means to come before God and make peace with God. It means to give up everything else that we hold on to. So here's the challenge. Be reconciled to God. Surrender what holds you. Whether it's your barns full of possessions, whether it's your fear of people's rejection of you, don't be afraid of their judgment, including the world's self-righteousness. As a pastor, I have to be careful of that because I have people who say, well, you know, as a pastor, you should be doing this, and it's one of man's rules, but suddenly I feel all judged, and I'm like, oh. Can't be afraid of their judgment and the world's self-righteousness. But the other things that he said in here is he talked about, don't be afraid of the cost. Don't be afraid of explaining the cost. Don't be afraid of embracing the cross. Don't be oblivious to his mission. He said, you guys don't even know what time it is. You don't understand what's going on, and I'm going to come and you won't expect me. Don't be oblivious to his mission. His mission was to seek and to save, to reconcile. To be reconciled. So the message of the whole evening as we've sung about the cross is to embrace the cross. It's going to cause division. Sometimes it's going to cost you terrible things. Don't be afraid. And don't let the things you have now hold you back from what the cross means. Embrace the cross and everything it means. Let's stand and sing.